Welcome to the Shipping Podcast, a multi-fandom podcast for the shipper in you. Hosted by Shirazade, your friendly mod, OTP shipper, and fandom old. Episode 9 could bear the subtitle, The Cursed One, because Yami and I ran into so many technical difficulties. Hopefully the end result will be enjoyable anyway. I for one really loved Yami's enthusiasm for the animated show Ruby, and its canonical ship of Blake Belladonna and Yang Xiaolong. But what's a ship, you might ask? It's an abbreviation for relationship, and can be used as a noun or verb. I ship Kirk / Spock, or my favorite ship is Spirk, meaning you would like to see Star Trek's Kirk and Spock as a couple. And in the latter case, you're using one of the popular ship names, smushing their names together in a way that can be cutesy or cringy, depending on your point of view. However, this podcast will be zero judgment, 100% squee, as fans talk about their ships, why they ship them, and which fanworks might make you ship them too. At the end, each guest will nominate the next fan to talk about their OTP that's one true pairing, i.e. the ship they love the most, creating a multi-ship, multi-fandom chain of interviews. Het, i.e. straight couples, / meaning same-sex pairings, fictional characters, or even real people. The only limit is the imagination. Does that sound like something you might enjoy? Please give it a listen and let me know what you think. The Shipping Cast is hosted on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's fandomish.net, where you can find show notes and subscribe on various podcasting platforms. There's also a Tumblr at shippingcast, a Twitter at shipping_cast, or you can email me on theshippingcast@fandomish.net. where you could also send me a recorded voice message for inclusion in a future show. I'm very open to questions and opinions about the ships we talk about or shipping in general, so please get in touch. I very much enjoy making this podcast, but I've had to start paying for pro accounts, so I set up a Patreon on patreon.com/shippingcast, in addition to the Ko-fi and PayPal links, which you can find on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. Would you like me to record some episodes that cover more general aspects of fandom instead of being limited to ships? One of the Patreon perks is special episodes, and you can even vote on the topics. A note in advance. As mentioned before, this podcast is a judgment-free zone. My guests are here to share what they love, not to defend themselves. We ship and let ship here, and any flames, i.e. hateful messages, will be used to roast marshmallows, to use old school fandom lingo. This expression dates me, I know. I'm actually 38, and I've been writing fanfiction since I hit puberty. However, I only joined online fandom in 2001, which was also when I started writing fic in English. My native language is Swiss German, in case you're wondering. And I have the equivalent of an MA in Cultural Anthropology, Media Studies and German Literature. These days I work an admin job in the renewable energy sector, and I spend my free time consuming media in the form of books, movies, TV shows and podcasts. I find fandom fascinating, not just as a creative outlet in the form of writing, reading and gifting, but as a cultural phenomenon. I hope I'm not the only one who loves to hear people talk about their passions, and there's few things fans are more passionate about than their ships. The ship that we focus on in each episode is clearly stated in the title, so if you think that a ship will cause you distress or anger, please skip the episode. It's also quite likely that there'll be spoilers, so in the immortal words of River Song,
spoilers.
Blake and Yang, aka Bumblebee, are not only our first femslash pairing, but they're about to become canon too, which makes shipping them a whole different level of great. Yami introduces me to the fascinating source material, 6 seasons so far, and still going strong, but listen for yourself.
I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea, to a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea.
Okay. Hi, Yami. So nice of you to join me today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Today we are actually going to talk about another fandom that I know nothing about, which is always quite exciting. Mm-hmm. Even more exciting, it's our first Femslash, Chip,
Yay.
And the first one that is actually canon, right?
Technically canon. The end of season 6 had the beginnings of the two of them getting together. Season 7, from all the hints from the voice actors and the two writers of the show, are telling us that it's going to be canon next season.
Ah.
The voice actress of Blake in particular is very excited about this, so it's kind of everything they're going, it's happening.
Awesome. But before we get into that, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit?
All right. Hi, I'm Yami. I'm Australian. I go by Neon Crayons on Tumblr, Discord, AO3, anywhere you could find me. I'm 24 years exhausted. I'm a seamstress and a kennel hand. I've been in fandom for about 10 or 11 years, and I've done basically everything you can do, from writing fan fiction, creating fan art, cosplaying, running blogs. Basically, oh. If there's a thing I can do in a fandom, I've probably done it.
Okay, so for someone of your age, you're already quite fandom old then.
Yeah, I've been in fandom since I was about 13, 14, so yeah, I've got in pretty early.
Wow. So you were nice enough to fill in when Gray couldn't find someone to follow, and I want to thank you for that.
No problem.
And yeah, you had actually contacted me about being on the show before.
I contacted you after the Science Bros episode, because I was tagged in that because I was running a Marvel blog at the time.
Yeah, you had a different username.
Yeah, I was going by Science Husband back then.
It's just a Tumblr thing where it's always kind of like, is that the same person?
Yeah, I kind of settled that I was sick of constantly changing my name, so I decided to use the name I use for literally everything else and just leave it and stop changing it every time I get into a new fandom.
Yeah, as someone who's been using the same online nick from day one, I very much appreciate that.
Yeah.
I get confused easily.
Yeah, I've had another friend that I've had that with. It's like, Yami, quit changing your name.
But yeah, I do get that it's kind of tempting to have like a name that reflects your current obsession.
Yeah.
So that was MCU. What other fandoms have you been in? What's kind of like your fandom history?
Well, I started my fandom adventure in the Red vs. Blue fandom back in 2009. Yeah, that just kind of opened the door to everything. I found fandom forums, I found fan fiction, and kind of from there I went everywhere. I went Bleach, Naruto, Yu-Gi-Oh! Super cool.
Okay.
I've done so many different things. I would be here for hours trying to tell you everything I've done over the years.
So quite the fan butterfly then.
Yeah, I do multi-fandom everything. Yeah. I can't stay on one thing for too long.
Yeah. Multi-fandom, also multi-ship?
Sometimes multi-ship. I do a lot of characters that I do shipping of multiple characters, but there are certain characters and certain ships that you can only ship with one person, like Malik or Grimmins. You can't ship them with anyone else, or it's sacrilege. It's absolute sacrilege.
We're not... I'm sorry. I apologize for my own shipping in that case.
That's fine. Other people can ship what they want, but for me, sometimes you've just got that one ship.
Oh yeah, I know that. With my OTPs, I get quite antsy when some people ship them with other people. I'm like, but they belong together!
Yeah. Like, no, stop it, stop it. They belong together, can't they love each other?
Yeah, that's like, I get like an almost physical reaction. That's kind of like how I define my ultimate OTPs, like the big ones.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, those are the ones where I get really possessive about.
I know that feel.
And this for Ruby, is that the case as well?
Yeah, for Ruby, it's Bumblebee and White Rose. You try and ship them with anyone else and I will come after you with a pitchfork. They all belong together.
So you will have to tell me who those people are, because those acronyms don't actually mean anything to me.
Bumblebee
And what the fandom is. What is it even about?
All right. So Ruby is a story about a girl named Ruby Rose and her team. Four people, Team Ruby, which is her partner, Weiss Schnee, Blake Belladonna, and Ruby's older sister, Yang Xiaolong. The four of them go to a Huntsman Academy where they learn to fight the creatures of grim monsters of the night, and kind of they become protectors of the realm.
Okay.
And yeah,
so it's quite adventure.
Yeah, it's a
style.
Really big adventure anime. It combines a lot of elements of the magical girl genre and the shonen genre. It's a really cool mashup of both, so it has fans from all over coming into it.
Mm-hmm. I actually learned what shonen is in one of the previous episodes, so go me. That's for boys, right?
Yeah, that's a boys' manga.
Yeah.
JoJo is girls. This series doesn't actually really fit into shoujo, but it is very much a magical girls because you've got crazy magical powers, you've got girls in fancy outfits with ridiculous weapons that make no sense but are absolutely amazing. Like gun scythe. It's a scythe that is also a high-impact sniper rifle.
Okay.
You've got swords that become guns and spears and they do all kinds of things. My favorite weapon is Yang's weapon. It is a pair of kinetic shotgun gauntlets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're shotgun gauntlets in her hands, and they work with using kinetic force, and they are just amazing, and they create an explosive kind of show of power. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic. I love them.
Yeah. And the show's been running for a while?
Yeah, 6 years.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, we just finished season four about 3.5-4 weeks ago.
So now you're in waiting pattern for the next season.
Yeah, waiting for October.
But it has been renewed.
Oh, yeah. It's a show by Rooster Teeth. They're a small animation company. They do all kinds of things. Ruby is the one of the first entirely original series they've ever done, and it's been running incredibly strong since the day they dropped the Red trailer, which they dropped 2011, I believe.
Yeah.
And then they dropped four trailers, one for each of the main girls. And they are just fantastic.
Yeah.
They really got everyone in for the series.
Yeah. It's pretty cool that it's like such a successful, like, action-y show that's focused on girls, like that's
And it was a real big shot coming from the company because initially they started with a machinima series based on the Halo multiplayer called Red versus Blue, and that was very much a boys kind of series. There was probably a 10% fandom for girls in that one, so coming into a series like Ruby, you're like, holy damn, you can really see the growth of the not only the company and the writers, but just the difference in what they're willing to create. It's fantastic.
And I assume it's like the girls, like the focus is all on the girls and their like their adventures, but also their relationships.
It's really big on the adventures, the story of each individual girl on their own and together. The adventure they go on, the personal growth, the relationships they build, all incredibly important to the story,
Oh, that sounds really cool.
It is amazing. It's while there is an overlying story to it all, it is very character-driven, and I love that about it.
Okay, so there is, like, an overarching, like, they have to defeat, like, a big bad or something.
Yeah, there is a big bad. You don't actually find that out until season three. The first two seasons, you kind of just assume it is going to be a Harry Potter style. They go to school, they fight random villains, they do crazy shenanigans every season, and the stakes just get higher and higher until it all accumulates into something big. But at the end of season three, so many other things are revealed and just wow, there is a whole other story to this.
I love it when they, like, you can tell that the show writers, they really put thought into like the story arcs and stuff. That's really cool.
When they started, Monty Ohm, Miles Luna, and Kerry Shawcroft. I really hope I'm pronouncing his name right. The three of them had about 6 or 7 seasons worth of stuff already planned when they started season one. So they already had a huge amount done and ready. So they've done incredible work over the years. Three years ago, though, one of the creators actually passed away, so the fandom has been very torn up over what happened from seasons 1, 2, and 3 to 4, 5, and 6. There's a lot of controversy in characters, story, and it's just devastating to watch a lot of that fall apart for such a series that's supposed to be about love, acceptance, and growth. It's devastating to watch a lot of people fall apart over that.
Oh, that's a pity.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming, you know, you're still going strong.
Oh, yeah, every season, because it's an American series, it comes out different times. I have an alarm on my phone for when it comes out that I wake up at midnight to watch the new episode.
Oh, okay, that's dedication.
Yeah, because if I wake up in the morning and I open Tumblr, I will get just spoilers in my face and I'll just be like, well, my day's been ruined. So I wake up at midnight, I watch the episode, I sit there for 5 minutes going, that was intense, and then I go back to sleep.
Oh, wow. So, so currently you don't have to do that.
No, I don't need to do that anymore. Not until October.
But going from the show to the ship.
Bumblebee.
They're two of the main characters, right?
Yeah, they are two of the title characters. They are Black and Yellow. For the Red, White, Black, and Yellow. They are Blake Belladonna and Yang Xiaolong. The two of them became partners during their entrance exam to Beacon Academy, the school they go to for the first 3 seasons. It's basically a test where the principal throws the girls and all the other students off a cliff into a forest full of monsters and goes, fight this forest! Find a partner, grab a wallet, come back. If you come back alive, you're in.
Oh, nice. Oh.
Yeah, it's basically go big or go home in this series. And it's one of the things I really love about it. Yeah. The stakes are incredibly high, even as a student.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's brilliant.
So they're like high school age or?
Basically, yeah, they'd be just out of high school, aged about 17.
Okay.
Go to a combat school prior to this where they study weapons and combat, and it's basically them going, this is what I want to do with my life, because once you enter Beacon, you are trained to be the defenders of the universe, or the world that they're in. And it's a very big job.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And it's always, like, in pairs.
Yeah, you work in teams of 4 and groups of 2. So each pair each 2 pairs makes a team, and then the team gets a leader out of the 4 of them. The leader of Team Ruby being Ruby Rose, Yang's younger sister,
who
was admitted into the school under special circumstances because she's 2 years younger than everyone else, but a brilliant prodigy.
So she's like the chosen one.
Actually, yeah, she basically is. So she's got magic eyes that can destroy literally everything made of darkness.
That's handy.
Just a bit. It really helps when the dragon shows up.
Oh, the dragon. Oh, there's dragons.
There's a dragon, as far as we know. We haven't seen any more dragons. And there's a Godzilla monster. Which is really cool.
Yeah. So what made you kind of zone into those, like, Blake and Yang?
Honestly, it really is their relationship. The two of them grow so much over the course of this story. Their relationship, they go from being, Blake especially, she starts off as a very standoffish, loner type character. She doesn't really get along with others. She tries to separate herself from other people and not get close because she's afraid of hurting them. She's afraid of her past getting out, because she is not only is she part of a subjugated race of animal people, She's also a former member of a terrorist organization that started out as a peace organization, and she's very ashamed of her past and afraid of what will happen when people find out about it.
Okay, so she's trying to redeem herself. Or...
Yeah, she's very much trying to redeem herself for the terrible things that she did during the time that the organization she was a part of went from being a peaceful organization to what's basically a terrorist cell. And yeah, a lot of it had to do with her former partner, lover, Adam Torres, who very much manipulated her as a person into doing all kinds of things that kind of went against her moral code. And her leaving him and leaving the organization, the White Fang, is the start of her story in Ruby.
Yeah.
So kind of where it begins for her, and yet her desire to redeem herself, because all these horrible things that she's done in the past, she wants to make amends. Whereas Yang, on the other hand, hers is a lot more straightforward. She really just wants a crazy life where she never has to worry about what tomorrow is going to bring, never really thinking about her future, just kind of going with the flow. Although she does have a desire to eventually find her birth mother.
Okay.
Because she left when she was very young, and she was raised by Ruby's mother and her father. But after her stepmother died and she found out that she had a birth mother, she became very curious about her. So part of her story is finding her birth mother, who she does find and is not impressed with her at all. But yeah, together they kind of grow as people. Yang becomes more self-aware and realizes there's a lot more to the world. Maybe I could be doing something more. And like, eventually, not until like season six, starts to kind of mellow out and kind of see, I don't need to be this standoffish person. I can let people in. I can care. Not everyone is going to turn out to be a massive dick or be out to get everyone. There are good people in this world, and I can care about them without worrying that they're going to get hurt. Although she starts learning that earlier on, but the end of season three kind of pushes her character growth back quite a bit, because her ex comes back and kind of disarms Yang. Literally, he cuts off her arm. So, yeah, there's this whole scene where Blake and Adam are fighting, and Blake is badly injured. Yang comes along and sees this, tries to defend her, and gets her arm slashed off. So that brings up a lot of Blake's guilt, and her instinct to run away to protect the people she cares about really kicks back in. And yeah, she ends up separated from everyone at the end of season three, and she doesn't actually come back into the main story arc until the end of season five, early season six. So yeah, for two whole seasons, she's off somewhere else having an entirely different adventure. Blake goes back to her home island to reconnect with her family. She ends up taking a stowaway in her friend and fellow Faunus' son, and the two of them have their own little adventure where they kind of try and fix the White Fang and try and bring it back to what it used to be, which was a peaceful organization bent on trying to help their race rather than destroy it. But yeah, lots of different stuff happens between them and some people from Blake's past. They struggle to find anyone to help them, because most of the Faunus living on her home island are there specifically to get away from all the fighting and just all the stuff that the outside world has. It's not great being a Faunus in the Board of Remnant. They started out as a subjugated race, and it's only over the past, I think, decade that they've really started getting their own rights and have been treated like actual people and not animals. Yeah, so her entire story arc very much revolves around her being a freedom fighter and trying to help her race.
Okay, so in the meantime, then the other three are still doing the defending the world. thing.
Most of them are. Ruby and three of her other friends are off trying to rescue another school that's been that's about to be attacked. Yang is back home with her father, and he's helping her deal with her PTSD and her losing her arm and relearning how to fight, because her fighting style literally revolved around her using her hands. So yeah, she ends up getting a prosthetic, but she's very afraid to use it.
Oh, yeah.
It's all very, the psychological point of view has been very broken, because before this she was very much an undefeated fighter. She was one of the best. And to suddenly go to not only losing a part of herself, but her ability to fight, and just so much in the span of 4 seconds, it breaks her. Not only that, but she's lost so many people. One of their friends died, two of their friends actually died at the Battle of Fall of Beacon. Her partner left her alone when she needed her most, and that very much broke her as well, because the way partners are in the series, it's they are the person that you can rely on most in the entire world. You don't abandon your partner.
Yeah.
So Blake leaving really hurt Yang as well in an unimaginable way.
Oh, those are some quite heavy themes.
Yeah, it really does. It goes from being a lighthearted show where they fight monsters and take down really dumb villains to just going into this heavy lore, these huge villains that just want to take over and destroy everything these girls have been fighting for and they love.
Yeah.
It hits you, and it's wow.
Yeah, and then also like those personal issues.
Oh yeah, the personal issues as well, and just finding their way past those so that they can be a team and a family again, how they can fight to protect everything that they love and not die in the process.
Yeah.
It's so much.
Yeah. So your two girls, they've been separated now for several seasons.
Yeah, they separated for 2 seasons. Yeah. They got back, all four got back together officially in the last episode of season 5. And
okay.
One of the things I really like about that is that when they do get back together in season 6, not all is forgiven. They don't automatically just go, you abandoned us and everything is fine now that you've come back. There really is a part where Yang full-on tells Blake, I'm glad that you're here and I'm happy you came back, but that does not erase the fact that you did leave. You did abandon us, and it will take time for us to regain that trust. I really like that, because I absolutely hate it when stories go, yeah, this person betrayed us, hurt us, and did all this, but because they've returned, all is fine now. Those are things that I don't get how they could actually happen.
Yeah. There should be consequences.
Yeah,
for
and there are. Blake really sees that she messed up, and over the course of season 6, she has to earn back that trust. She screws up a little by not understanding why she's really lost the trust. She doesn't get that her leave. Actually, no, it's not that. It's more she doesn't get that when she's come back that she. Yang doesn't want her to protect her. She wants to stand with her, because the way Blake kind of sees it is that Yang is broken in a way. She can't fight anymore and she needs to be protected, and that doesn't roll over very well with Yang. Yang is a protector in her own right.
I can imagine.
Yeah, there's this really important scene, and it starts out as an absolutely beautiful scene where the two of them are bonding again, and you can start to see Blake repairing the damage she did to Yang, and then she just says that she will protect her, and just the way she says it, you can just see Yang close up and be like, excuse me, you think I need to be protected? What is this? And it's just a really emotional scene.
And that's like in the last season.
Yeah, that's in the latest season. It's the latest season. Takes place over the course of about 4 or 5 days, and it is an emotional train wreck.
Okay, that's intense.
Oh, yeah, so much happens in, like, 3 to 4 to 5 days.
And, relationship development as well.
Oh, yeah, there is huge developments in their relationship, especially. They are actually forced to fight their abuser again, Adam. He starts stalking Blake because she's begun to move past him and move on from the atrocities that he committed and has stopped caring about him, mm-hmm. and he's no longer kind of there in the back of her head haunting her. She's begun to move mm-hmm. on, and that does not make him happy like it would any abuser. He becomes very much obsessed with her and wants to destroy everything that she cares about. And mm-hmm. one thing he knows she cares about above everything is Yang.
Yeah.
He is not happy that she went back to her. He is not happy that of what she's doing, that she's willing mm-hmm. to just forget him or any of that.
Yeah.
And I
assume that because there's a romantic side to her relationship with Yang, that probably doesn't help either.
No, when he realizes that it's more than a friendship, it's romantic. During their fight, you can see the moment he notices and, oh, does he get angry? That entire fight takes place for the course of 2 or 3 episodes, and it is non-stop. It is amazing. It's mm-hmm. actually my favorite part with Blake and Yang, because you can really see how much both girls have grown. You can see them overcome the flaws they've had in their fighting styles and the way that they attempt to protect other people. You can see how they've grown and learnt. We don't have to, we can protect one another together. We shouldn't just be trying mm-hmm. to protect one of us or the other. Mm-hmm. And just watching the two of them come together and fight together, it's amazing. And then finally overcoming their fear of him and fighting him and stopping him, it's amazing.
Oh, that does sound really cool. Like a shipper's dream, basically.
The best part, though, is Yang has a bike, and the bike's name is Bumblebee. Same as episodes prior, there'd been a running joke in the fandom posting on Tumblr and even on the Ruby talk show that happens 2 days after it airs, where everyone was like, Yang should just yeet the bike at him. It was just a joke. And then an episode later, she comes in and throws her bike at him. And it is the greatest moment of all time. I love everything about that moment.
So why are they called Bumblebee?
Because their colour scheme is black and yellow. So Bumblebee.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Like, the series Ruby in general has a huge emphasis on colour and symbolisation. So a lot of their stuff comes from colour. I love it. It's amazing.
And I assume that the ship is quite big in the fandom.
Oh, yeah. It is the single biggest ship in the fandom.
Mm-hmm.
It overrules every single ship. They did of the four main ships for the series, Bumblebee, White Rose, Arcos, and Renora. They did a shipping poll for them, and mm-hmm. Bumblebee won by a landslide. They won by about 70-odd%. And you're sitting there looking at all the rest of the ships going, yeah, they've got some numbers. They've got some numbers. And Bumblebee's over there hogging most of them.
Well, I mean, that's like a dream when your ship is actually, you know, like endgame.
It's amazing.
And is the fandom very active?
It is ridiculously active. It's constantly evolving, constantly new people coming in, bringing all kinds of mm-hmm. new and interesting and a little bit weird. The hiatus is definitely very interesting with all of the cowboy Yang stuff that came in, and that is weird. A whole bunch of memes and jokes have popped up, and I only understand about half of them. I don't know where they came from or what they are. They're just there, and they confuse me a little. I did a bit of research into one of them, and I regret reading the fanfic immensely. I've never regretted reading a fanfic, especially not one that was less than 200 words, but I heavily regret reading the Yours fic.
So there's lots of, like, memes and also fic and art and stuff?
Yeah. It kind of started with ideas for their new mm-hmm. outfits for the next arc. And we were going with cowboys. And then somehow that turned into a meme, and it was terrifying. And it just went to weird places. But, you know, I think we're past it now.
Oh,
I went into the Bumblebee tags today, and I didn't see I saw one thing for Horse Yang, and that was it. So I think we're past that hurdle.
So that sounds, but that sounds like a quite fun, lively fandom.
It is. When the horrible waspy people who are just like to be horrible and toxic aren't around, it is a wonderful fandom to be a part of. There is just so much entertainment, and it's great.
Ah, cool. And you already said that you are also creating fan works.
Yeah, I've created quite a few fan works for Ruby, though I've only got one published right now that is Bumblebee. Yeah. I wrote a drabble of them dancing, and it is very adorable, and everyone loves it. It's probably one of my most read fanfics now. Only one down from an old Naruto one that's been up for like 3 years, so that's got a bit of a head start.
So is it like a proper drabble, or?
It's just under 300 words, so yeah, it's a proper drabble.
No, it's not a proper drabble. A proper drabble. A proper drabble has 100 words, and this is a hill I'm going to die on.
I thought a drabble was under 500 words.
And that's one way to look at it. It's the wrong way to look at it.
Under 500 words.
That's the wrong way to look at it. A drabble has to have, it's exactly 100 words. Double drabble, 200 words. Triple drabble, 300 words.
Well, it's just under 300 words, if I remember correctly. It's one of my shorter ones from my drabble weekend.
Yeah, I know, that's kind of a divisive thing, where it's like, drabble is, that's the old school definition, was it's exactly 100 words.
Yeah, I think over time it's kind of come to mean it's a short fic under 500.
I know, I simply refuse to use this definition.
I understand. I have some old school terminology that I will die on a hill with. And I had to re-educate a bunch of young, new fandom people on the citrus scale, and trying to explain that really makes me feel old. Lime, lemon. Orange, grapefruit.
See, I never used the citrus scale.
I'm old enough to use the citrus scale.
I think that came very much from like the anime side of Flash fandom, yaoi and stuff.
It came from basically anime pornia.
Yeah, see? And I was never in that. I was always in like Western style fandoms. Yeah. So it was, when I started out, it was very much like the movie ratings, NC-17.
Yeah, we use more of that now, but yeah, way back in the day, we used the citrus scale.
I know.
A way to get away with stuff on fanficnet.
Yes.
The fanficnet is a garbage dumpster fire, and I hate everything about it, but it's where I started writing fanfiction, so I still have my garbage account on there.
I fled when they deleted all the adult stuff. So, like, early 2000s. So, but back to the point, which was, you've written...
I've written one fic that was specifically for Bumblebee, which was called Our Love is Like a Melody, So You Be the Rhythm and I'll Be the Rhyme.
I love titles like that.
And, yeah. I did really intricate, really fancy titles for all of the drabbles. I'm also writing a long fic, and Bumblebee is endgame for it. Mm-hmm. There's no Bumblebee right now because other stuff to focus on, but later on, it will heavily feature Bumblebee because I can't not write Bumblebee. But there is a very high chance that it'll actually be Sunny Bees because I very much love Sun, and Blake has two hands. She can have a cute monkey boyfriend and a hot dragon girlfriend.
Okay, OT3.
Yeah. Sunny Bees is best ship.
That's the perfect solution for boring old love triangles.
Yeah, I've never seen the
polyamory.
Yeah, it's like, Blake has two hands. She can hold two hands. She can have two people. She's bi. It's great.
Absolutely. So is that quite common in Bumblebee fandom that there's like also OT3?
It's reasonably common. it kind of sits at a point where the Black Sun and Bumblebee shippers are kind of in a mini war, and then there's a Sunny Bee shipper sitting off to the side, drinking our drinks, eating our popcorn, sitting there watching this dumpster fire go off, and a lot of the Bumblebee and Black Sun shippers are sitting there like, those Sunny Bee shippers are really out there living their best life, and I'm always like, yep, I don't see the point in hate. I like both of them.
Yeah.
Let Blake be with both. Why not?
Yeah. And are there like other like common tropes and stuff that's going on in that in fandom, except in addition to the cowboy stuff?
Well, Blake is a pirate because her outfit is very pirate-esque, and just mm-hmm. she's also a ninja. That's more a running joke from Ruby Chibi, and the fact that she likes to be a cat burglar and a bit of a ninja, and she's always doing really weird, silly things. Mm-hmm. And she reads a book called Ninjas of Love, which is a running joke that it's a porno. But yeah, there's pirates, there's cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of different things like that, and they're really fun, and I love them. I love all the artwork that comes from mm-hmm. them, even the weird stuff I have to love, because it's just so weird and fun.
Yeah.
I've been part of so few fandoms mm-hmm. where a ship has become endgame and sudden, and everyone's okay, and there isn't just a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
So the fact that the fandoms decided, well, we're getting canon, let's have fun, is really great, good to me. Because
yeah.
I've been part of so many fandoms that I've been like, the end has come, or a ship has become canon, I've had to go, well, I'm leaving because this is toxic and terrifying and I hate it.
Yeah, that sucks when that happens. So yeah, so you should definitely enjoy it. And how about we move on to your recs now?
My recommendations. I don't really have a lot of fanfiction. I've got basically literally anything written by Explosive Sky. They do really amazing Bumblebee work, really mm-hmm. long work. Even their one-shots are ridiculously long, and it's amazing.
Oh, awesome.
So just Explosive Sky, because mm-hmm. Bumblebee, my heart, I love them. An artist that I absolutely adore who has never made a bad piece of art is Torusu Simon, or mm-hmm. Torutetsu. They do great work. I love them. And Runaway Bees does some great stuff. There is an amazing comic that just, it breaks my heart by Ayukroix. I hope mm-hmm. I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Well, there'll be links in the show notes so people can find the yep. stuff.
You just so much beautiful artwork, and I love it. And people are so talented, mm-hmm. and I cry because I wish I was that talented.
Yeah.
Like, I won't do that. I do some great stuff, but these people are so much better than me.
So is the artwork mostly like in the same style as the series?
Yeah. People are really good at mimicking mm-hmm. the style. It's a really great style. But a lot of people as well have their own style that I love. Like, I love Dumb Ruby style. Mm-hmm. Dumb Ruby, the comic series that is done by an artist who does a comic after every episode if they've got mm-hmm. an idea for something. It's basically taking the piss out of really dumb, silly things that happen in the episodes. And I adore their work. They do amazing stuff, and they were fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome.
And their style is great. Other fanfics are this isn't a Bumblebee centric, but they are pretty prominent in it. It's Reconciliation by Miki Chan 13. It's a fantastic series set post season mm-hmm. 6, and it goes into so much to do with the things that went wrong during season 6 and everyone kind of making up for what they did.
So is most of the fic like canon based?
Yeah, a lot of it is canon based. I personally have read very little AU work for them. I've a couple of like high school ones mm-hmm. or coffee shop AUs. They're always great and cute and I love them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of it is very in canon based.
Yeah, because I guess there's so much that you can make of canon, yeah.
And with such a wide and open universe, the Rumiverse is great for that. The world of Remnant is just so big, and you do so much with it. The lore is fantastic. The connections the characters all have to different things is great. One thing I realize I haven't talked about, and that is the characters' allusions to fairy tales, which are kind of important. Oh, and I'm such an idiot for not mentioning them sooner. So the characters in Ruby are based on fairy tales or myths or things like that. Ruby and Yang are based on Beauty and the Beast and Goldilocks.
Oh, okay.
So Blake is the Beast and Yang is Beauty. But Blake, to her own story, is both Beauty and the Beast. And on her own, Yang is Goldilocks. And Beauty and the Beast plays a huge, huge role to their story, the allusion to it. It really comes out in season 3.
So the fairy tale themes, they're deliberate.
Yeah, they are. Each character has an allusion to a fairy tale character. Like, you've got the Red Riding Hood, Snow White, Beauty and the Beast, and Goldilocks are the four main characters. They play a pretty predominant role in the story. Mm-hmm. Are gender-bent versions of characters that have cross-dressed in the past. So they are Joan of Arc, Achilles, Thor, and Mulan. The characters that they all reference from myths and fairy tales and stuff like that are all very important to their characters for all different reasons. They allude to a character's journey, their life and death situations in the stories. They're all different things, and I absolutely adore it. There's a couple of characters that don't know the official allusions to, so the fandom had a lot of fun kind of guessing what they are, and that's a lot of fun. But yeah, the allusions to Beauty and the Beast are very, very prominent in the story of Balmain. The rose is Adam. I think he's also Gaston.
Oh, yeah.
That one's never made explicitly clear, but yeah. Adam does play a very big role to them because he is Blake's
mentor. And Adam, isn't Adam the name of the beast?
Yes, which is also very funny. He's also he is a bull, he's got horns. Blake is a cat fauness and she's got cat ears. It's also something really funny. One of my favorite little scenes in the story is Yang is trying to get Blake's attention by using a laser pointer because she's a cat.
So it's not all doom and gloom. There's also, like, some lighthearted moments.
Especially in the first two seasons, there's just so much fun stuff. Like, the shenanigans leading up to their Vital Festival dance. There's the joking about who's going to enter the Vital Festival second round. There's silly stuff with Blake being a cat and liking tuna and being very sad when a bowl of fish is taken away from her. Horrible stuff, and that's the thing that really drew me into Ruby. In a world that's full of so much darkness and they're all facing near death, they still find time and moments that are so light and happy, and it's something that draws me to this series more and more, and I adore everything about it.
That does sound very lovely.
It is,
and it's quite a nice place to maybe stop.
Yeah.
Now you just have to tell me who I will be talking to next and what I will be talking about.
Next, you'll be talking to my very good friend For the Wolfie, and she will want to discuss with you the Naruto Shippuden ship Saturday, or Sasuke and Data of the Hidden Stone.
Okay.
It is the ship that actually we first met discussing. We met in person at a cosplay event. We were both cosplaying these characters, and it kind of just spiraled from there into a really cool friendship that we had for a while. Suddenly we lost contact, but very recently we got back into contact, and it was again through this ship and fan fiction. So yeah, she's very excited to come and talk about it.
Oh, cool. Fandom friends are the best.
They are. But yeah, aside from all the screw-ups, I very much enjoyed coming on and talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I did enjoy very much hearing about this fandom, about this ship. It sounds really, really fascinating. I totally get why you're so into them.
It's amazing. And you should definitely watch Ruby. It's great. You can binge watch in like 2 days.
So the episodes are quite short, or?
Yeah, the episodes run from about 5 minutes to 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Go and watch Ruby on roosterteeth.com. Season 6 is only available there. You can get an account for free or you can sign up for first. I promise that they're not telling me to say this. I just love the company so much.
Great.
They do amazing work. They also have 2 other series, Red vs. Blue and Gen Lock. Go watch them. They're amazing.
Okay. Cool. Again, right. Thank you so much for hanging in there with me.
All good. I really had fun. All right.
Okay.
Bye.
I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea, to a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea.
This wraps up episode 9. After many, many stops and starts due to technical hiccups, I hope I still managed to cobble together something fun. As Yami mentioned, the show is currently on hiatus, so you have until the fall to catch up with it and to check out the recommended fan works, which are, as always, collected in the show notes and can be found on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's spelled fandom, ish.net.
The next episode will be released on March 22nd,
earlier for Patreon supporters, and will feature an interview with Forda Wolfie about the ship of Sasori and Deidara from Naruto Shippuden. I apologize in advance for once again butchering the Japanese language.
You can follow and get in touch on Tumblr as ShippingCast, on Twitter as Shipping_cast, and you can email the podcast on theshippingcast@fandomish.net. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think of the podcast and the ships we've been covering. You can find the podcast wherever podcasts are found. A full list is on shippingcast@fandomish.net/subscribe. As mentioned before, if you want to get the next episode the moment I finish it, at least one day early, you can become a supporter on patreon.com/shippingcast. This also has some other nice rewards, like extra episodes on other fandom topics, and that way you can help me pay for the necessary pro accounts for the podcast and keep me going. There's also the option to send me a one-time donation on ko-fi.com/shirazade or via PayPal to webmistress@shirazade.net. All these options are also described on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. And you can help me totally for free by leaving reviews or simply spreading the word to other fans. I'm Shirazade, spelled Shirasade, and you can find me as such on Tumblr, AO3, YouTube, Pillowfort, Dreamwidth, and on shirazade.net. I've also joined Mastodon as shirazade@fandom.inc. The podcast artwork was created by the wonderful Little Zion. The music is Sailor Song by the Peerless Quartet. Thanks so much for listening, and remember, you are the captain of your ship.
And once again, I can't understand a word. What the hell?
Oh my god.
Now I am crying. It's like, oh god. Now you're back. I don't know what's going on.
Finally, it's only taken 2 minutes. This episode is cursed. You've got to have that title in there somewhere, the cursed episode.
This episode is cursed, absolutely. But we somehow managed to make it through.
Thank fuck.